I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there, 2 hours a day. Next hour, it's Wednesday. Even on Thanksgiving Eve, we'll kind of tie the health show, little parts of it, into Thanksgiving itself. Some helpful hints for both mental and physical health. A warning about Thanksgiving, too, when it comes to your health. But we will do Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use next hour, as we always do. So stick around for that. For today's show, I feel like I should be doing some touchy-feely stuff. I feel like I should be doing something lighthearted. It's close to a holiday. I can't help myself. What was the line from The Big Lebowski? What is it? New information's come to light. There's a cuss word in that quote somewhere. And that's what happens to me on a daily basis here when I'm looking at, and particularly these shots, the studies keep piling up. I'm going to have some time off during the holidays. I've got to get this stuff out into the world. I'm talking to Clay before coming on the show. I don't know who I'm talking to anymore, but I do believe that getting good information out about these shots while they're rolling them out on our kids is important. If it was just the adults making adult choices, good or bad, whether I agree or disagree with them, that's really almost a totally separate thing to me. And I'm going to tell you, if you are an adult and either being forced or are trying to decide on these shots, I really believe at this point there aren't a whole lot of adults left. You're on one side of the fence or the other. I don't think a lot of people are still contemplating it. The time is up for the vast majority of adults, but now it's our children. Man, it's our children. And I'm going to get these studies out there. Some very amazing stuff. I've got a story today from Cardiology Advisor. It's a big journal for cardiologists, for the love of God. And it's a very succinct piece, but it's a warning. So I'm going to cover that stuff today. Well, like I said, I'm going to get into some positive stuff next hour. Hump Day Health. Some gratitude stuff. We could all use a little gratitude practice in our life. Feels a little hippy-dippy, but I do believe there's some value to that. Anyway, we'll talk about some of that fun stuff next hour, but I want to get into some of this. My quotes of the day today. First one comes from a guy named Donnie Miller. No idea who that is, but he knocks it out of the park with this quote, "In the age of information, ignorance is a choice." In the age of information, ignorance is a choice. And ignorance is not the same as stupidity. I've talked about that a lot over the last couple of weeks. People who really either think a certain way, vote a certain way, take or don't take a shot, it's not stupidity, it's ignorance. When people don't know the facts, what Donnie Miller is pointing to in this quote, though, is that information is swirling all around you. You can research anything you want to. We have like a genie in our pocket on our phones. You just ask the universe a question and you get back answers. And people who do not use that and allow their ignorance to persist in this particular day and time, it's kind of hard to believe. Thomas Massie says, Thomas Massie, the Kentucky, the libertarian Republican from Kentucky, says, "We're 18 months, two presidents, $5 trillion, three jabs, and a shredded constitution into slowing the spread." Just to think, You know, I know this is, it's talked about a lot, but just to go back and think about the fact how this all got started. 2 weeks to flatten the curve. 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Here's a couple of headlines that are out there right now that are just mind-boggling. Don't have a big stack today, but there were two of them on top of each other. Long Island emergency room forced to close over lack of vaccinated nurses. Let's think about the logic of this, right? This is an emergency room. The people who go to an emergency room are experiencing an emergency. Many of these emergencies are immediately life-threatening. Your medical establishment has decided to understaff emergency rooms to provide immediate life-saving care because the nurse may or may not possibly infect a patient down the road who maybe has a 0.3% chance of succumbing to a disease in 3 months. Did I cover all the qualifiers there? These hospitals, these are the places that you go to have your life saved. They have decided that they don't need nurses if they don't have the jab because there is this minuscule chance that they may contract and then pass along COVID to somebody there, which 99.7% of people will fully recover and survive. But that 0.3% chance that a nurse might infect somebody by being unvaccinated, so they're going to close down emergency rooms of people who need immediate care to save their life like that minute. Like pending imminent death. Am I making that point? I can even feel in my head I'm not explaining that well. But they have taken patient care from, they're going to deny you immediate care to a life-threatening situation, be it injury or disease. They're going to deny you care for that because there was this possibility that the nurse who might have saved your life on Tuesday may have infected you with something that might make you feel icky 2 weeks from Tuesday. This is the thinking, the mentality of your medical establishment and political class in this country. And then there's this story. This headline is enough to make me throw up a little bit in my mouth. Pharmacists try new tricks to get kids shots. This is a Wall Street Journal article, and I guess I pulled up enough. I've run into the paywall at the Wall Street Journal. But here is the first sentence of it. Pharmacies in the U.S. have aisles of bandages, cold medicines, and toiletries, now expect to pass aisles of screaming children. Screaming children, crying out with this huge mass experimentation on the American people, really on humanity across the world. Those children screaming out, should be screaming out. Parents should be screaming out. Citizens who don't have children should be screaming out against this mass inoculation, this mass experimentation on our children. And let me just tell you this, pharmacists, you are now on the list. You're on the list. Now, I know a couple of really good pharmacists that would never try to trick a child or an adult into getting an experimental gene therapy. But they are probably just like the doctors, just like the scientists out there, they are probably the outliers in their profession. And I'm sure that that headline, pharmacist, try new tricks to get kids shots, those good pharmacists out there are as sickened by that headline as I am. But pharmacist, I'm telling you, you will rue the day that you started inoculating children with an experimental shot. And if you don't believe me, stick around, because there are more studies rolling in every single day that are confirming the trend is not your friend. This thing should not be anywhere near our children. I'll be right back. do you remember last year when the media reported, particularly towards the end of the year and heading into the elections, that Trump was this giant murderer? Look what Trump did. Trump caused, this is what the headlines were in the media, Trump stood by while 350,000 Americans died from his horrible mismanagement of COVID. You remember this? Now, I'm no Trump apologist. If you've stumbled upon this show running around to get your Turkey Day stuff together, you're not usually off at 9 o'clock in the morning. You tune into this guy. He's fighting the mandates. He's fighting the masks. I think I like this guy, but you're a big Trump fan. I've got a rude awakening for you. I'm no Trump fan. I don't quite understand why Trump gets a pass on this vaccine stuff. It's very interesting to me. I know a lot of Trump supporters, Trump loyalists, who really understand what a crime against humanity is being undertaken right now. Trump unleashed this on us. He takes credit for it up to and including today. I'm not sure why I'm supposed to ignore that, but many people are able to. But it was wildly unfair to lay at Trump's feet this, but the media constantly reported on 300. I think at the time of the election, you know, it was like 325, 350,000. 350,000 people needlessly died because Trump bungled his response to COVID. Well, let's see how the Biden administration and Trump's warp speed's working out for us in 2021. The virus was reported as the underlying cause of death or a contributing cause of death for an estimated 377,883 people in 2020, accounting for 11.3% of deaths, according to the CDC. As of Monday, more than 770,000 people have died from the coronavirus, according to Johns Hopkins University data. That means over 15,000 more people have died in 2021 than last year from COVID-19, and there's still more than a month left. Isn't that interesting? I have not heard the left or the mainstream media talking about Joe Biden's bungling and the needless death of another 377,000 people. Excuse me, no, it's 392,000 people have died under the Joe Biden coronavirus response. Where is the media on reporting that? Isn't that interesting? Oh, you people on the left, it must be exhausting mentally to justify these kinds of things. I did, I think on Monday, I covered the story that people studied in Britain showed that the vaccinated were twice as likely to die from all other causes, all-cause mortality, as the unvaxxed. That certainly is a cause for some alarm and some study and investigation. Of course, it wasn't reported anywhere in the mainstream media. But we don't know exactly what's causing that. Even if we suspect it's long-term adverse reactions to the shots, we certainly can't say that. I'm not going to claim that on this air, but it is certainly, you know, I think that's what they call statistically significant, that the vaxxed are dying at twice the rate of the unvaxxed in Great Britain from all-cause mortality. That's not from COVID. That's from all causes. That includes a lot of strokes and heart attacks. A lot of other diseases that are more severe now. I've played clips from people in the National Health Service over in Great Britain saying, hey, our hospitals are overwhelmed with people not suffering for COVID. We don't know what's going on. Seems like something they might want to take a look at. But they won't. But how about this? Data from physician assistant Deborah Conrad, presented by attorney Aaron Seary, October 17th of 2021, shows vaccinated people are 9 times more likely to be hospitalized than the unvaccinated. The key, however, was in what they counted as vaccinated. Rather than only including those who had gotten the shot 2 weeks or more before being hospitalized, they simply counted those who had had one or more shots, regardless of when, as vaccinated. Quote, this is from their from the attorney's filing here. A concerned physician's assistant, Deborah Conrad, convinced her hospital to carefully track the COVID-19 vaccination status of every patient admitted to her hospital. The result is shocking. As Ms. Conrad has detailed, her hospital serves a community in which less than 50% of the individuals were vaccinated for COVID-19, but yet during the same time period, approximately anyone? 90% of the individuals admitted to her hospital were documented to have received the vaccine. These patients were admitted for a variety of reasons, including but not limited to COVID-19 infections. Even more troubling is that there were many individuals who were young, many who presented with unusual or unexpected health events, and many who were admitted months after vaccination. Despite these troubling findings, health authorities ignored Conrad when she reached out. In mid-July 2021, Ceres Law Firm also sent formal letters to the CDC, the Health and Human Services Department, and the U.S. FDA on Conrad's behalf. Those were ignored as well. And I've got a story today that, see, this is all about statistics. The reason that this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated is that they have excluded 45 days of many people's lives. That's your first shot, the 30 days after your first shot. Then you take the second shot, and 15 days after that, then you're counted as vaccinated. But that 45 days, you're still considered unvaccinated. This woman just said, huh, seems like we got a lot of people in here who've had at least one shot. They've gotten a shot, but they're presenting with kind of bizarre stuff. A lot of younger people. Let's just do a little census and see how many of them have taken the jab. Turns out it was 90%. And that's in a community with only 50% vaccination status. Seems, again, like something that should be looked into. There is a number out there, and I have struggled to try to figure out how to explain this because it's like several topics. It may be me. I've talked about this many times. There's some topics where I can, you know, the overnight repo market, the reverse repo market that goes on. I've talked about it on this show. I can read a story about how the reverse repo market works, interbank lending, and I can understand it perfectly. 2 hours later, if asked to explain it, I'll struggle. I'll have to go back and read the article again. There's something when it comes to these shots called absolute risk reduction. It is what the FDA says should be explained to people for everything, all kinds of drugs. It is the important number, except when it comes to COVID, apparently. But I ran across a clip here of somebody explaining what absolute risk reduction is. You know, you've heard the statistic that Pfizer's shot is 95% effective. Of course, that's gone down to as low as 17% effective right now, I believe, in England. But we hear this 95%, and people think, if I take this shot, I reduce my risk of getting COVID by 95%. Why wouldn't you take this wonder drug? That is the relative risk reduction number. It's the headline number, but it's usually not the most important number. The absolute risk reduction number is actually what is the preferred statistic to find out the efficacy of any drug, not just a shot. Here is a great explanation of exactly how that works out and how misleading this 95% efficacy number is that Anthony Fauci and Thomas Dobbs spout out of their pie hole every time they're asked.
And you have the right to know the potential benefit of any intervention. For example, Pfizer reported that its vaccine shows a 95% efficacy. That sounds like it protects you 95% of the time, right? But that's not actually what that number means. That 95% refers to the relative risk reduction, but it doesn't tell you how much your overall risk is reduced by vaccination. For that, we need absolute risk reduction. In the Pfizer trial, 8 out of 18,198 people who were given the vaccine developed COVID-19. In the unvaccinated placebo group, 162 people got it, which means that even without the vaccine, the risk of contracting COVID-19 was extremely low at 0.88%, which the vaccine then reduced to 0.04%. So the net benefit, or the absolute risk reduction, that you're being offered with a Pfizer vaccine is 0.84%.
Wait, what? Your absolute risk reduction, those of you who have taken the shot, prancing around with it, of course, the prance is a little more humble now as you're forced to prance socially distanced and prance in a mask, but you've been prancing around thinking that you have really knocked it out of the park by getting the shot, really protected yourself and others. The difference that you have made in contracting COVID is 0.84%. That's not 84%, that's 0.84%.
That 95% number, that refers to the relative difference between 0.88 and 0.04%. That's what they call 95% relative risk reduction. And relative risk reduction is well known to be a misleading number, which is why the FDA recommends using absolute risk reduction instead. Which begs the question, how many people would have chosen to take the COVID-19 vaccines had they understood that they offered less than 1% benefit?
That's a pretty good question. That's a stat. That's an explanation of the true protection of these shots that most people who lined up to take these things, many people hesitantly or really involuntarily, probably don't want to hear. But again, that's the statistic. This absolute risk reduction is what the FDA prefers people use, except for when it comes to this shot.
What's the frequency, can it be shot? Things are dreaming.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. So check this out. One statistic that kind of struck me, we hear a lot. I hope the vast majority of people who took these shots are going to be fine. But there may be a sliver of people, there may be something common to them, a blood type, a genetic marker, something that makes them predisposed for this to have a bad outcome. This is not unprecedented in drugs. All drugs come with risks, and oftentimes they find that certain people are susceptible to side effects with any drug. But they tell us that this is very rare, and let's hope it is. It's still for the families of those who have problems, to the 18,400 that are reported in VAERS to have died after these shots. It's a true tragedy. But they tell us it's rare. But think about this statistic. What if it's just half of 1%? I mean, that's rare, right? I mean, 99.5% of people have no problems with this shot whatsoever. That could be the case. We're inoculating 200 million Americans with it. Half of 1% is a million people. COVID right now, which we've upended our entire society, our financial system, and our lives for over 2 years, is said to, and we know this is an inflated number because of the way it was reported, is said to have taken 750,000, almost 800,000 lives. If the vaccine is a problem for even one half of 1% of the people, that's a million people. That's more than COVID itself. A study that I ran across yesterday, I believe it's a jaw-dropper. This was originally published as an abstract in on the American Heart Association Journals.org, AHAJournals.org. It was written by Stephen R. Gundry. Again, this is the American Heart Association. Put this on their page. It was republished, an article was written about it in the Cardiology Advisor. This is one of the kind of trade rags for a cardiologist. If you've got a child trying to figure out what they want to do for their lives where they can make a bunch of money, I might recommend cardiology, because if this story is true, if this study bears fruit, cardiologists are going to be up to their neck in business for decades to come. Here's the abstract of this. Again, this is on American Heart Association Journals, AHAJournals.org, abstract 107121, mRNA COVID vaccines dramatically increase endothelial inflammation markers and ACS risk as measured by the PULS cardiac test, a warning. Let me read to you from it. I'm going to go to Cardiology Advisor, who published this, because it's a little bit more layperson speak. The risk of developing acute coronary syndrome, ACS, significantly increased in patients after receiving mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, according to a report presented at the American Heart Association's Scientific Sessions 2021. These were held from November 13th to the 15th. The study included 566 men and women, half men, half women, aged 28 to 97 years, who were patients in a preventive cardiology practice. All patients received a new PULS cardiac test 2 to 10 weeks after their second COVID-19 vaccine. The test results were compared with a PULS score from 3 to 5 months pre-vaccination. The PULS cardiac test measures multiple protein biomarkers, including, and here we go, I've told you I'm not a scientist, not a doctor, hepatocyte growth factor, HGF, soluble FAS, and IL-1.16, and uses the results to calculate a 5-year risk score for new ACS. And again, ACS is acute coronary syndrome. So this test is designed to as a predictive of the next 5 years' risk of acute coronary syndrome. The PULS score increases with above normal elevation. All participants received this test every 3 to 6 months for 8 years, so they have a long record of what these patients were scoring on this PULS test. This is in a preventive cardiac practice. You've been studying them every 3 to 6 months for 8 years. From pre-vaccination to post-vaccination, the levels of IL-16 increased from 35 to 82, above the norm. Soluble FAS, I don't know if that is, it's FAS, showed an increase from 22 to 46, above the norm. HGF rose from 42 to 86, above the norm. As a result, the 5-year ACS, that's acute coronary syndrome, PULS risk score increased from 11% to 25%. By the time the report was published, changes had persisted for 2.5 months or more after the second vaccine dose, meaning that they did this study and they realized these risk factors in the vaccinated that were severely elevated, and they continued to study them until they gave the presentation at the American Heart Association. And those levels were still elevated because we're being told, oh, your son got myocarditis. It's mild and it'll go away. These patients who have been tested routinely for 8 years with this test are showing a substantial increase in risk of acute coronary syndrome, and it's persisting from the time they did this study until the time they presented, meaning it's probably still going on. It was not a short term. It was not a blip. It was not a side effect, hospital visit for something, and then it goes away and you go back to life as normal. Again, that's the American Heart Association. That's cardiology advisor telling us these things. When I come back, I'm going to see if I can parse through this study on the Pfizer data. It is unbelievable. Apparently, the talking point went out. It was laughed at by an awful lot of people, although not laugh, ha ha, laugh, oh my God, are you serious, laugh, laugh. That people who were vaccinated were actually had a more robust protection than those who had naturally occurring, you know, who had had COVID and recovered, and so they had natural immunity. And so some scientists have gone in and they've looked at this data because I don't know that's ever been the case. You know, your natural immunity has been known until about a year ago as to always be the most robust immunity, but Pfizer tells us, no, that's not the case. This shot is such a miracle. It's better than natural immunity. Well, some scientists went in and started parsing through their raw data to get to that conclusion. Wait till you hear some of these numbers that were actually in the raw data. I'm going to go off on a limb and say, Pfizer's trying to mislead us. Can you believe it?
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. We're the renegades, it is the atomic age.
You know, I started the show off today with the quote, in the age of information, ignorance is a choice. I mean, this stuff is out there. But it's so It's so memory hold immediately. I mean, you have to search. I'm trying to help take some of that heavy lifting off listeners to this show to try to find stuff that you may not find on your own. I spend a lot of time on Substack, maybe one of the last bastions of free speech out there. And this is a story about a study that came out. Well, let me just read from this piece, this Substack article from a writer there. On October 29th, 2021, the CDC released a study through which it was proclaimed that fully vaccinated persons enjoyed a 5.49 times greater protection from COVID than persons who enjoyed natural immunity due to recovery from a previous COVID infection. The study concluded that, quote, all eligible persons should be vaccinated against COVID-19 as soon as possible, including unvaccinated persons previously infected with the SARS-CoV-2. However, if we dissect and analyze the elements of the study upon which this claim of increased protection for fully vaccinated persons is based, we find glaring discrepancies between the bold claims made by the CDC, which I will add is a vaccine sales organization, not a protector of Americans' health, and the actual findings represented in the CDC data. I'm going to go through some numbers here. If you are like me and you are a visual learner, you know, I am very big on reading down through something and then realizing I may have lost a little bit of the context. I need to go back. If you want to read any of these things that I'm sharing with you today, you can email me. I'll send you the links to these articles. I'll send you the link to the study published on the American Heart Association's website about the increased risk of acute coronary syndrome for the vaccinated, more than a doubling of the risk. And it persisted for more than 2.5 months until they made this presentation, very possibly still persisting to today in these people's study. So I'm going to go through some of this stuff just to show you the dishonesty. What do they say? Lies, damned lies, and statistics. These pharmaceutical companies, the CDC, the FDA, will take statistics and twist them until they scream to give them exactly what they want. They torture these statistics. Let me tell you about this study. The goal of the study was to determine who enjoys greater protection against COVID, persons who were fully vaccinated or persons who were previously infected with COVID than recovered. That's natural immunity. To implement the study, hospitalized patients with, quote, COVID-like symptoms, unquote, were studied in 187 hospitals across 9 states between January 1st through September 2nd. So this is a large study. A total of 201,269 hospital patients were identified in this time period to have had COVID-like symptoms. Using a series of factors and criteria, this patient group of 201,269 patients was narrowed down to a pool of only 7,348 patients. I'm going to start rounding off some of these numbers. I mean, you can email me, MikeMadison@WIEB.com. I'll send it to you. But just for so we're not caught up in longer, more complicated numbers. According to the CDC data released to this study, of these 7,348 hospitalized patients, 6,328 had been fully vaccinated, while 1,020 had not been vaccinated but enjoyed natural immunity. So they're trying to prove that the vaccine is better protection than natural immunity. They study 7,300 patients hospitalized with COVID-like symptoms, and they find that 6,300 of them had been fully vaccinated, while only 1,000 had not. Of these 7,348 patients, a total of 413 actually tested positive for COVID. Okay, so now we're getting down to brass tacks, right? These are the people who have COVID. So, Mike, let's find out. Of these patients tested for COVID, what was better, natural immunity or the vaccine? Of these 413 patients who tested positive for COVID, 324 had been fully vaccinated, while 89 were unvaccinated. Again, out of 413 patients, 324 of them had been fully vaccinated. Only 89 were unvaccinated. CDC also shared data breakdowns according to age. According to these breakdowns by age of 7,348 hospitalized patients, 5,300 were over the age of 65. Of these 5,300 hospitalized patients over the age of 65, 4,900 of them were fully vaccinated, while 464 were unvaccinated. Over 10 times the number of vaccinated hospitalizations as unvaccinated. Also, of these 5,367 hospitalized patients over the age of 65, 293 tested positive for COVID. Of these 293 patients who tested positive for COVID, 253 were fully vaccinated, while only 40 were unvaccinated. And we are told that these hospitals that, again, I don't know where they studied these. It was across 187 hospitals in 9 states. Must not have included Mississippi, because here in Mississippi, Thomas Dobbs is sticking to pandemic of the unvaccinated. You dirty, dirty, dirty unvaccinated people are filling up our hospitals. You are all a plague on society and should be punished. Yet this is the CDC's own data. In this one number, you've got 5,300 people hospitalized. 4,900 of those 5,300 are all fully vaccinated. Thomas Dobbs says that's not happening in Mississippi. Here, it's only the unvaccinated going into the hospitals. This goes down into, say, some of the other things that they did. This was interesting in this study that they did. Again, they will manipulate the data however they need to get to the desired result. The CDC provided another important data breakdown. I know I go from data to data. I don't know why I do that. I should really settle on one. In determining that fully vaccinated persons enjoyed 5.49 times greater protection from COVID than their unvaccinated counterparts who enjoyed natural immunity, the CDC applied a time restriction. This part of the analysis only included patients whose full vaccination or previous infection had occurred 90 to 179 days earlier. When we remove this time restriction, we're left with an interesting result. When the 90 to 179-day time restriction is removed, the original pool of 7,348 patients is expanded to 20,482 patients. You see what they did? They go in. The results I've just given you are bad for the effectiveness of the vaccine. But it's even that's after they put this arbitrary 90 to 179 days. And this 90 to 179 days, I've talked about it here on this show. What it looks like with the shot is after you get it in months 2, 3, 4, something like that, you get the most robust protection. So they kind of targeted that area to try to make it look the best. Once the scientists who went in here and started parsing through the stuff said, okay, let's take this time restriction off of there, they ended up having, instead of the 7,300 patients, over 20,000, 20,482. Of these 20,482 hospitalized patients, 18,397 were fully vaccinated, while only 2,085 were unvaccinated. Of the 672, again, a lot of these are COVID-like symptoms, 672 of those who tested positive for COVID, of the 672, 542 were fully vaccinated, while 130 were unvaccinated. This goes down to, I'm going to stop because I know I'm probably wearing people out with numbers and statistics. Again, email me. I'll send this to you. I don't want to wear you out with numbers back and forth. This is not great audio stuff. This is kind of YouTube material. I need screenshots so I can put up these things so people can read along. I can't do that. I don't have the ability to do that. But when you look at these things and realize the tortured statistics that they use to try to make the case, and you have to read through this to figure out how they even get to this idea that the vaccinated are somehow more protected than those with natural immunity, when it looks like every single cohort they studied, no matter how madly they tried to twist statistics and use time restrictions on this study, they still ended up with the vast majority of people hospitalized being those who had gotten the jab. I think the solution may be for everybody in the country to move to Mississippi, because Thomas Dobbs says that's just not happening here. Here, it's all the unvaccinated, so maybe there is something in the water in Mississippi. Maybe it's the cotton fields putting out some kind of a spore that are adding to the protection of the shot. Or Thomas Dobbs could just be lying to you. One of the two, I guess. This stuff is out there. These studies are done. There are scientists out there actively checking up on the CDC. I wonder if this is one of the reasons that the FDA has asked for 55 years to provide all of the data they use to make the authorization to roll these shots out on everybody. They want 55 years to comply with a FOIA request. Even Reuters thought that was suspicious. I tell you what, the more you read stories like this, you understand why they want that 55 years. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Wednesday, Thanksgiving Eve or not. I am soldiering on with maybe my favorite segment each week, Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Use. I am very passionate about using nutrition to heal chronic problems. I saw probably six or seven nagging conditions I had just go away. I thought they were all symptoms of me getting older. I was just cursing the hands of time for my deteriorating health and comfort. And then I switched to an organic diet, and they all just went away. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. So I'm going to give you today what I normally do, which is suggestions for you to do your own research to take back your health. I want to remind everybody, as I say every show, I'm not a doctor, not a scientist, not a biologist, not an immunologist, not a virologist, not a surgeon, not a nurse, not a therapist. I'm not a nothing. Got no certifications to advise you on your own health. I'm just trying to spark some intellectual curiosity in people when they're suffering from problems and realizing that that first medication caused some problems that made them get on a second medication. And then maybe you'll finally realize that these medications are not designed to get to the root cause of your problem. They are simply to mask symptoms, and that problem is still festering inside of you and breaking down other things in your body. That's why people start on one medication, which turns into three, which turns into seven. And by the time you're a senior citizen, I forgot what the statistic is. It's something like most people over the age of 65 are on like 11 different medications. It's because you never addressed the root cause of their first problem. You just masked the symptoms. Much like when I hear a problem with my car, because I don't know what's going on with my car. If I hear my car making a funny noise, I just turn the radio up. Solves that problem. Ultimately, the car breaks down. The problem just gets worse, starts affecting other things, and eventually I have a broken down car. It's the same thing with your body. And so I talk a lot about nutrition on here, but I always want to be very clear with people because I know that it feels like, to reclaim your health, you need to make this grand gesture and you need to sit in the corner eating carrots during the egg bowl while everybody else is enjoying themselves and you're pouting in the corner because you've committed yourself to your health. Thanksgiving to me is a time for me to enjoy myself. I'm going to eat pretty much anything I want. I'll avoid some things because I know they're going to make me feel bad almost immediately. Or they're going to make me feel really bad through the rest of the day. Sometimes I'll just go ahead and take that as a consequence. I'm going to want to take a nap after a Thanksgiving dinner because my blood sugar is going to spike and then drop like a stone, and it's going to wipe me out. That's something comforting to that. I've done it for so many years. But I don't think depriving yourself is a successful strategy. I think it's a losing proposition. And I like better the strategy of trying to include good substitutes so you still have the kinds of things that you like. You just have them better. If you're going to eat organic. It's a tad bit more expensive. But what would you pay to feel a little bit better? Would you pay as much as you pay for a streaming service for a month to feel better? But I just enjoy myself, and that's the strategy. I haven't lost friends. I haven't missed social engagements. I haven't had less fun because I've changed my diet. And I'll be honest with you, I have no intention or desire really to live to be 100 years old. My entire approach to nutrition for myself is all about quality years, not necessarily quantity. I may live to be a happy and healthy 100-year-old. I think we just had the oldest human die a couple of days ago at 124 years. I got to tell you, I don't think I'm up for that. Particularly not if the world stays like it is right now. It's on my last nerve as we sit right now. I may live to be a happier, healthy 100 years old, and that's great if I'm mentally stimulated and I'm able to get around. That's fantastic. I may get hit by a bus tomorrow, but I've had a great 15 completely disease-free years, and I'm in good shape now. So even if I bite the bullet tomorrow by being hit by a bus, it was certainly worth my time getting knowledgeable about these things. 15 years of full mobility and time with my kids and my friends and my family, never missing anything to illness. That includes work, which is a little bit annoying. I actually miss having a sick day, being able to call into work, but I haven't had a day to call in for 15 years. But I'll also say I'm not going to turn down a single thing that I want to eat tomorrow. And I do encourage people to enjoy themselves. I just always want to be very clear that I'm not somebody, you know, I'm not wagging my finger at people at the dinner table. Enjoy yourself. If you pay attention, really what's worked for me is probably paying attention to about 80 to 90% of my diet. But when I go out, cut loose, I'm going to have a good time. And then what I do is for myself, and I'm going to give a date on this, beginning of every year, I do a fast, a water fast typically. It's water only for several days. A lot of people think that's insane. There's a ton of science to back this up. This is what I think is the great reset, but the good kind, not the Klaus Schwab World Economic Forum type, but it's the great reset for me at the beginning of every single year. I'll take anywhere from 3 to 5 days, and I'll have nothing but water and let my body kind of heal and repair itself. I haven't had a sick day in 15 years. I've been doing this every year for 15 years. Seems something's working, so I'm going to stick with it. I'll announce a date after the beginning of the year. Maybe I'll have some people join me. You can do anything from a single day to 3 days. Really very simple, I believe. Day four is usually a little kind of rough for me, and by day five, I am so excited about any food I'm going to be able to put in my system that I break my fast. I want to go to 7 or 8 days this year just to see if I can do it. But anyway, enjoy yourself during the holidays. There's certainly nothing in my philosophy on nutrition that says you need to deprive yourself of everything all the time. There was a story out for Thanksgiving, and we've seen these stories each year that Thanksgiving, there's a spike in people with heart attacks. I started to research that a little bit. There is something to overeating. If you have potential heart problems and you tax your system too much with overeating, that can be a problem. They also talk about really one of the reasons that Thanksgiving is one of the most deadly times. A lot of it's car travel. So some of it's a little bit misleading. The stress of the holidays, those kinds of things. But winter months in particular, they see an increase in heart attacks and heart disease, those kinds of things. So one way to combat things like that with Thanksgiving tomorrow, and it's kind of like Christmas, do we really observe the holiday the correct way that it should be observed? Yes, we're all going to get stuffed tomorrow, get our families together, and whoever's cooking will be stressed out for days in advance, particularly these days where you can't find the ingredients. But there are 7 scientifically proven benefits of gratitude. This is Thanksgiving, after all. And this has been something that's been interesting to me over my years. As I took up meditation, at the risk of people judging me as some kind of a dirty hippie, I'll tell you, meditation is wonderful. I haven't been as good with my practice recently as I had been for years and years. I need to restart that. I always have to recommit myself to things. I let them fall off like anybody else. But gratitude was another thing I really discovered, and it is a mood booster. And sometimes even in the darkest times, you can still find things to be grateful for. There are 7 scientifically proven benefits of gratitude. Gratitude opens the door to more relationships. Gratitude improves physical health. Gratitude improves psychological health. Gratitude enhances empathy and reduces aggression. Grateful people sleep better. Gratitude improves self-esteem. And gratitude increases mental strength. I'm not going to spend a ton of time going into these studies, but you can look it up. There's all kinds of things. You can keep a gratitude journal every single morning. You wake up and you count kind of the things that you're happy for. Even in the darkest times, you will find that this has a profound effect on how you approach your day every day, realizing that there are anchors in your life, regardless of how the job's going or money's going or even your health is going at the time. There are other things you've got that make you an extremely lucky person. This first one where it says gratitude opens the door to more relationships. That's because none of us want to be around somebody who's who thinks the world is out to get them constantly. But I think it's a huge mental exercise, and there are studies that have shown these things to have actually impact on your physical health, not only your mental health. So take the reason for the season when it comes to Thanksgiving, and then we also start to focus on Christmas after this, and consider that as well. Having a sense of gratitude in your life can have profound changes on you both mentally and physically, so it's something worth considering. When I come back, I've got a pharmaceutical ad that I kept seeing on one of the streaming services, and I did what I do. I found the ad. It had a disclaimer in it, as they all do, that really kind of made me go, wait, what? Because maybe it has something to do with what we've been seeing for the past 18 months. I'll do that and then give you a natural treatment for the condition that it names. There is one very basic principle of the natural health approach to things, and that is that your body is breaking down. If you're suffering from any chronic conditions outside of, you know, very severe genetic disorders, and even some of those can be affected with nutrition, but most chronic conditions that Americans are suffering from, it's because you're not giving your body what it needs. Body's very complex. I play clips from Dr. Berg, Dr. Axe. I got one from Dr. Axe today. About, you know, different conditions requiring different kinds of foods or supplements. And the reason is that because different parts of our body, different mechanisms within our body, different organs within our body need different minerals and vitamins. And so what you're suffering from is not bad luck. It's that you're not getting the proper amount of nutrition, or you're not absorbing nutrition correctly because you've got problems with your stomach. You are not giving your body what it needs to self-repair, to keep it tip-top shape. It's nutritional. And here's a study, you know, that just highlights that. This is on Study Finds, good nutrition may be the best anti-aging thing you can find, a new study reveals. Researchers at University of Sydney say when comparing the benefits of drugs, which promote healthy aging, and good metabolic health, their study finds nothing beats eating a healthy diet. Now, a lot of us are interested in anti-aging stuff. It's kind of odd, isn't it? Every year that goes by, you get a little bit more interested in anti-aging stuff. I don't know what the connection is, but it's true. In a preclinical study involving mice, the team found consuming a healthy balance of calories and macronutrients had a greater impact on aging and metabolism than three drugs with which doctors prescribe to treat diabetes and slow the aging process. In this section, titled Anti-Aging Drugs Actually Get in the Way of Healthy Eating, scientists have been working hard to find medication which improve metabolic health and aging without requiring patients to change their diets. However, study authors say drugs designed to improve health often target the same biochemical pathways that the nutrients in your food help. Quote, diet is a powerful medicine. However, presently, drugs are administered without consideration of whether and how they might interact with our diet composition, even when these drugs are designed to act in the same way and on the same nutrient signaling pathways in the diet. This is from senior author Professor Stephen Simpson. Quote, we discovered dietary composition had a far more powerful effect than drugs, which largely dampened responses to diet rather than reshaped them. He goes on to say, quote, given humans share essentially the same nutrient signaling pathways as mice, the research suggests people would get better value from changing their diet to improve metabolic health rather than taking the drugs we studied. I'm not going to get to the rest of it. It gets down into some of the liver stuff. Study authors examined the impact of both diet and medications on mice in 41 different combinations, changing the levels of protein, fat, carbohydrates, calories, and drug content in each test. Specifically, researchers looked at the impact of three anti-aging drugs on the liver, which plays a key role in regulating metabolism in both humans and animals. This is the bottom line. The dirty little secret of the medical community that they don't want you to know. Your nutrition plays so much of a more of a part of the quality of your life and how you age than anything else out there. But they will convince you when you go see them, when you get one of these symptoms. Like I said, when I started, stomach problems, headaches, fatigue, restless leg, insomnia, chronic bronchitis and colds and flus, I thought, oh man, it sucks to get old. That was 15 years ago. I changed my diet. I haven't had a single one of those things rear their ugly head in 15 years. It was the nutrition, dummy. That's what I say to myself. When I come back, I'm going to get into this ad for Tremfya. I keep seeing this thing. They got a slick new ad campaign. You may have seen it, like the glass shards coming out of people's skins. Looks very painful. But there was a disclaimer in this ad that really kind of made me think, huh, that's interesting. I think I've seen this in another ad before and have brought it up. But it's something worth considering. And it is talking particularly about psoriasis. So we're going to bring Dr. Axe on to tell you. If you want to avoid the side effects of these drugs, which sound pretty profound, there are natural ways to attack psoriasis. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with me. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, doing our segment. We do every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock, Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. I was watching a streaming service. I think it was Hulu, but I may have seen these on mainstream television as well. I just don't watch a whole lot of TV anymore. But I kept running across this ad, or it kept being shown to me, I guess is a better way to put it, for Tremfya. It's addressing psoriasis. Visually stark ad. People are wearing, the joints look like they're in very, they're in armor, like constrictive armor. Some of the ads, they show people's skin looking like shards of glass with the red glowing signals around them showing the pain of this psoriasis. So we're going to get into natural treatments for psoriasis on the other side of this. But I want you to listen to this this ad for Tremfya, and then listen to particularly the beginning of the, the warnings. We know the back half of every ad is all just, hey, this thing may really screw you up, but ask your doctor for it anyway. That's essentially what they all do. But here's the ad.
My plaque psoriasis, the itching, the burning.
The stinging. My skin was no longer mine.
My psoriatic arthritis made my joints stiff, swollen. Painful.
Emerge Tremfyant. With Tremfya, adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can uncover clearer skin and improve symptoms at 16 weeks. Tremfya is also approved for adults with active psoriatic arthritis.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them.
Huh. Yeah, we have to be asking ourselves, why has the United States had the worst COVID outcomes in the world? Could it be that we are so heavily over-medicated? And if you hear what this guy says in the disclaimer, he says it may prevent you from fighting infections. Huh. That's interesting. I've never heard that come out of Thomas Dobbs or Anthony Fauci's mouth. Hey, you may be more susceptible if you're on these drugs that actually impair your immune function as they try to address the symptoms of this disease that you have. I'm going to play that one more time, and then it starts talking about vaccines.
Infections may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, or if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Tremfya. Emerge Tremfyant. Janssen.
Yeah, so there you go. It's a Janssen Pharmaceutical. Just interesting. We've got a lot of people out there who are immunocompromised because of the drugs they're on. I looked it up during the break. There's all kinds of drugs that can suppress your immune system. There's lists of them, but in particular, I don't want to give these scientific names of them. You might recognize them if you're on them, but particularly Drugs, cancer drugs, obviously we know that chemotherapy and radiation suppresses immune function, attacks your healthy as well as your cancerous cells. Drugs for rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, organ transplants, and then severe psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. These things are suppressing your immune system, making you more vulnerable to things like COVID or flus and common colds and everything else. It's suppressing your immune system. Certainly something to be thinking about if you're taking those things. So what you could do is do something for your psoriasis that does not involve suppressing your immune system. And that's where we bring in our buddy Dr. Axe. This is a bit of a long clip. But as many ads as they're running for this psoriasis medication, I'm assuming a lot of people have got psoriasis. But I'm sure for other skin conditions as well, this may be something that you want to consider because, again, it's all about giving your body what it actually needs. He starts this out by explaining some success stories that are fast in his personal life. When people change their nutrition, sometimes you would be shocked at how quickly your body will repair itself if you're giving it what it needs.
Hey guys, Dr. Axe here, doctor of natural medicine and founder of DrAxe.com. In this video, I'm going to share with you the natural cures for psoriasis, as well as psoriasis remedies and psoriasis natural treatments. I can tell you this is very effective. In fact, you can see improvements in your psoriasis in as little as 24 hours if you follow the tips I lay out in this video. And I know this works because I've done it with thousands of patients. Even my own father-in-law had psoriasis and saw a 98% improvement in just 30 days by following this advice. In fact, my father-in-law was on four medications for 20 plus years, diagnosed with psoriasis, said it could never be healed, and we were able to heal it through following the tips you're going to learn in this video. So we're
do you see the scam that we are 20 years, four medications, told it could never be healed, never be changed. This goes on with every condition. The doctors will just tell you, well, it's your lot in life. You got unlucky. Nothing we can do about it, but we can try to manage your symptoms for you. Man, this is such a bad medical system when it comes to nutritional advice.
We're going to talk about diet for psoriasis supplements and other things here over the next few minutes. So the number one thing you've got to start doing when it comes to psoriasis is you've got to change your diet and you've got to add in these foods. Number one, probiotic-rich foods, whether that be yogurt or kefir or fermented vegetables. These are, it's so important that you get to the root cause of psoriasis, which really starts in your gut health. It starts with a condition called leaky gut. By the way, if you want to learn more about that, you can do a Google search for Dr. Axe leaky gut, and I have some great information there as well on that. But again, psoriasis starts in the gut, so you've got to increase those beneficial bacteria in your gut. The best way to do that is fermented foods, especially things like goat's milk yogurt is one of my favorite. Goat's milk kefir, you can find that at your health food store. You could also find it at your local farmer's market are the best places to find those fermented foods there. So that's step number one. Also getting more fiber in your diet. Soluble fiber feeds probiotics. So consuming more berries, things like blueberries especially are probably the best. Along with that, doing vegetables, cruciferous vegetables like cauliflower. Also doing, along with those vegetables, doing green leafy vegetables like spinach, and then seeds like flax and chia seeds. They're full of healthy soluble fiber, which increase good bacteria in your gut. The third type of food you want to be doing are foods high in omega-3 fatty acids, such as wild-caught fish like salmon. Also, mackerel is good. Arctic char is good. Sardines are good. Tuna is good. But fatty fish that are full of omega-3 fatty acids and other foods that are high in omega-3 fats, such as grass-fed beef. You've got to get more of these in your diet if you want to start overcoming psoriasis. And then just in general, doing fruits and vegetables are some of the best foods for helping you overcome psoriasis. And then herbs, such as turmeric is very good for reducing inflammation, as well as dandelion is another great one. The second thing you've got to do if you want to get rid of psoriasis is get rid of the foods that cause inflammation that you're consuming. If you're consuming a diet that's very high in processed meats, such as pork or conventional beef, that's very toxic to the liver. That's going to increase psoriasis, the symptoms of psoriasis that you're having. So eliminate conventional meat products, eliminate hydrogenated oils, get rid of sugar. Sugar is highly inflammatory. And even reduce your consumption of whole grains, especially when it comes to things like wheat bread and white bread or any sort of wheat and flour products. Get rid of those completely. That's essential to healing psoriasis. Jumping back, one more tip I forgot. Another food you should absolutely consume if you want to overcome psoriasis is bone broth. Bone broth is high in collagen, which actually helps heal the gut, which in turn helps you have healthy skin. And the best sort of broth to do is chicken broth because it's high in type 2 collagen, which helps repair the gut lining and also helps in healing the skin. So again, I would get chicken broth for that. The next thing you want to do is take certain supplements. Here are the top supplements you should consume for psoriasis natural cures and treatments. Number one is going to be a probiotic supplement. You know, again, probiotics help increase that beneficial bacteria. Don't buy a junk probiotic supplement. Make sure you buy a high quality probiotic supplement. Number two is experiment with taking hydrochloric acid, that's HCl, with pepsin. Taking HCl with pepsin helps you break down proteins, and part of what causes psoriasis is poor protein digestion. So when you're consuming protein with psoriasis, you don't want to consume large amounts of meat. You want to consume moderate, about 4 to maximum 6 ounces at one serving, but typically 4 ounces of organic wild-caught meat. And along with that, you can take what's called HCl with pepsin. You only take those with protein, though, and you'll start with one time. If you feel any warming in your stomach, you back it down next time in terms of the capsules there. But again, that's HCl with pepsin. The third supplement you want to consider taking with psoriasis is fish oil. Taking 1,000 milligrams a day of a high-quality fish oil with EPA, DHA can really support the body. The fourth supplement for psoriasis is milk thistle. Milk thistle helps detoxify the liver. And part of what's happening in psoriasis is overburdening of the liver. And so, again, by doing milk thistle and other herbs like dandelion, those help cleanse the liver. Those also help reduce symptoms of psoriasis. Also, vitamin D. Vitamin D is a key nutrient in overcoming psoriasis. I recommend 4,000 to 5,000 milligrams a day of a high-quality vitamin D3 supplement. And one other thing you might consider as well are digestive enzymes. Sometimes those also can really help with psoriasis. So if you can follow those tips, I guarantee you're going to see tremendous benefits in psoriasis. And from a topical solution standpoint, I recommend you make your own DIY recipe for a skin cream. Basically, you're going to buy something called shea butter online. That's S-H-E-A. And then mix certain essential oils. Specifically, my favorite is geranium oil. So again, you're going to get a shea butter, maybe a little bit of coconut oil, and then you're going to mix several drops of geranium oil in there, geranium essential oil, and rub that on your skin. Also, tea tree oil, chamomile oil, and lavender essential oil are also very effective for naturally treating psoriasis there and other skin conditions like eczema or dermatitis as well. But again, make a natural skin cream, get that on your skin. Make sure you also get out in the sun when you can. You're getting more vitamin D that way. I know that's a lot of tips, but by the way, if you want the written version of this, I have it written on my website, draxe.com. Just go to draxe.com and search psoriasis, or Google search me and search Dr. Axe psoriasis, and you'll find my article going over the top supplements, where to get them, all online on my website. And by the way, if you want more of these tips.
So there you go. You know, and I was doing some quick math. I mean, his father-in-law was on 4 medications for 20 years, told that he could never heal his psoriasis. He did these nutritional tips, solved it in 30 days. What do you think that would cost the pharmaceutical company if they didn't get 4 drugs every month for 20 years, and instead this man had healed himself at the onset of psoriasis? You starting to catch on to exactly why we're not told about these things? And as Dr. X does, look, that sounds complicated. It's really not. If you just break it down into its parts, you just go through each one of the things. The side effects of that protocol that Dr. Axe just put out is you're going to feel better all over. Probably other conditions you have are going to be better because it includes things like good omega-3 fats, vitamin D, more vegetables, less bad oils. It's going to help your overall health. No side effects. It does not impair your ability to fight off infection with that protocol to address psoriasis. It improves your ability to fight off infections, particularly by repairing your stomach, the gut health of your stomach. So you know, this is how badly we have missed the mark with the way we approach health, particularly here in the United States, where we're just a pill for every ill, over-medicated to the hilt. So if you want that, again, that's Dr. Axe. He told you where you could search online, or if you can't remember it, you're driving or something, you want any of these links, I'll shoot them over to you. Just email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com, and I'll send you my show notes for today. When I come back, something about inflammation, and then also there, I found a video on COVID recovery, and I think this is something that is timely. People might want to consider, and I originally had thought about it. Well, maybe this is a protocol for also recovery after the jabs. People are looking for that. Luckily, Wade called me during the break. I don't take calls during this segment because I don't want to be dispensing any advice, and I might do it accidentally. I'm not qualified to tell you to do what to do with your health. I'm just telling you to do some research and that this information is out there. But Wade called and said that they have released, there's a doctor, and I'll research it during the next week, and I'm sure have it for you next week. There is a protocol for detoxing from these vaccines. If you're having a problem or you just want to be back in top shape. I've noticed a couple of people that I know who seem to be a little bit more winded, a little bit more tired. That's not everybody. I know a ton of people who have had the shots seem like they're moving about their lives completely normally. But some people whose workouts might be a little more difficult for them, their recovery after a workout may be more difficult for them. So it might be a wise idea to just go in and see what you can clean up after these shots. So we'll do that next week. But in the meantime, I'll let Dr. Wheel, and I believe it's Dr. Berg, talk about COVID recovery. Stay with me.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the day. I want to remind everybody about a new sponsor to the show that I'm just absolutely thrilled to have on, and we're going to have them on the air every few weeks to talk about integrative medicine. This is Integrated Medical and Wellness Center. It's a new clinic that has opened up in Ridgeland right over there by Costco. Integrated Medical and Wellness Clinic in Ridgeland is a one-of-a-kind treatment center focused on increasing your quality of life. Their approach is based on the latest therapies and science and integrative medicine. And what integrative medicine is, most people don't know about it, it's booming around the country. It is taking into account your entire body, all kinds of different things. With decades of experience, this medical team is specialized best to treat your medical needs. They offer patients all natural and customized healthcare solutions that focus on and this is so important, inside to outside philosophy. Meaning they are looking for the root cause of your problem to help address that. They blend traditional treatment with treatment programs designed to relieve pain while targeting the cause of the disease. Their goal is to provide exceptional healthcare options with an emphasis on patient education, which I absolutely love. People can be empowered to take back control of their own health, the whole goal of this show. And to that end, they offer non-surgical protocol to help avoid total surgeries, platelet-rich plasma to accelerate healing and recovery from injury. Do a lot of work there using new technologies on joint repair, helping your body produce the things that it needs to heal your joints as opposed to a surgery. It certainly is a great first stop. You may find great relief and solutions to your problems there before you have to undergo surgeries. It's certainly worth a consultation anyway. That is Integrative Medical and Wellness Clinic. They're in Ridgeland over by Costco off of Draperton Drive. Their phone number is 769-300-9040, 769-300-9040. Or just remember this, imawc.com, imawc.com. That's Integrative Medical and Wellness Clinic. All right, I'm going to finish this up. I almost feel guilty sometimes when I play long clips. But if they've got a lot of good information, I'm going to do it. And know that for every 15 minutes of clips I play on this show, I've watched 10 hours of material trying to find the best explanations of things. You know, I'm a layperson just like everybody listening to the show, or probably most everybody. I would imagine I've chased off a lot of the medical profession. But some of this stuff is important. And I try to find topics that cover a large number of people. I'm assuming a lot of people have you know, looking at the statistics of maybe had COVID, there was talk about long COVID. Dr. Berg is one of my favorites for short, concise, information-packed, layperson-speak videos. He's on YouTube. Has got this getting past COVID symptoms. And so I wanted to play this because he gives you a nutritional approach to try to regain everything from just feeling better to your sense of smell and taste. That's been one of the side effects of COVID that they've talked about. And then next week, we'll get into detoxing from the shots themselves.
Let's talk about post-COVID symptoms, the residual symptoms that can occur after an infection from COVID-19. Now, some of these symptoms could last for weeks or even months, and they really depend on how intense was that infection. Was the person in the hospital? Did it go deep into the lungs? Did it create scar tissue? Are there pre-existing conditions on top of everything? Blood pressure, obesity, heart disease, cancer. All these additional factors are just going to prolong the recovery phase. What is the age of the person? And what is the current stress? I think this one is many times neglected because if a person is under stress, usually by, situations or even people, it can take a very long time to recover because they're stuck in the stress in their environment, and you need a very supportive environment to heal. So if there are current people or things that are stressing you out, do whatever you can to minimize that. And believe it or not, the less stress the person has, the faster the recovery. Now, what you have to realize is that all the symptoms that someone has from COVID and other viral infections are actually caused by the person's own immune system. It's the inflammation. It's called cytokines. And that is creating all the symptoms. In addition to that, the residual symptoms are also coming from the person's own immune system. So why does that matter? Well, we want to focus on the immune system. So the post-COVID symptoms, the top one would be fatigue. And then number two, shortness of breath, especially when the person exercises, coughing, joint pain, and chest pain. There can also be additional symptoms, depression, headache, fever that comes and goes, a loss of taste or smell, heart pounding or palpitations. So there are various things that can be done about this to pull a person out of, let's start with these symptoms right here, depression. Vitamin D, minimally 10,000 IUs, probably 20 or even 30,000 IUs will really pull someone out of depression. Headache, increased sodium, more sea salt. Himalayan sea salt is the best. If you're going through a fever that's coming and going, calcium lactate is one of my favorite remedies for fevers, especially if someone is younger. Loss of taste or smell, that means you need zinc. Heart pounding, more potassium. Also, a good thing to do would be to try to sweat, like when you go to bed at night, wear some clothes, a sweatshirt, keep your room really hot. Take periodic hot showers or hot baths, which are actually inducing a fever that will speed up the recovery time. Far too often, people try to get rid of their fever too quickly, and that prolongs the infection. So realize the more medications that a person takes when they're going through the infection, that could be the thing that can inhibit their immune system and increase the duration of the infection. Okay? So this is some things that I would recommend. Vitamin D, zinc, and vitamin C. These three nutrients are an absolute requirement, actually going through the winter months as a prevention, and especially if you have COVID symptoms, and you want to take these as early as possible. Vitamin D, minimally 10,000 IUs per day. Zinc, 1 to 200 milligrams per day. Vitamin C, 500 milligrams per day. I would recommend this being a food-based vitamin C. Now, since your own immune system is creating all of the damage and the residual symptoms, vitamin D is going to drop inflammation, so you're going to instantly feel better. Zinc also is going to strengthen your own immune system, so you can complete the immune cycle a lot faster. And vitamin C will also act as an antioxidant to prevent all the free radical damage that occurs when you're going through an infection. Frequent naps with additional sleep. Try to get as much sleep as possible because you want to let your body heal, and it heals while you're sleeping. All sorts of magical things happen to your immune system when you sleep. If you don't get enough sleep, it's going to take a lot longer to recover. No alcohol or sugar when you're trying to recover. It's going to set you back. This is why we always recommend you do healthy keto. And if you're new to my channel, I put a link down below for that. Intermittent fasting. So do not consume a breakfast. Don't eat snacks. Eat infrequently, 2 meals a day or even 1 meal a day. And what's going to happen, you're going to strengthen your immune system. Your immune system is actually going to get stronger when you do this. Now, I would recommend taking apple cider vinegar. Take a good tablespoon and a glass of water a couple times a day. That acidity is going to help stimulate something called phagocytes, which is going to help clean up some of this immune damage that's going on.
All right, he's got just a couple more points. We'll have to leave it there. I'm running out of time. I'll just say it to you in closing, have a fantastic Thanksgiving. Enjoy your meal tomorrow, but pay attention to your health going forward. We're about to start a new year. Start wrapping your mind around it coming up. But for tomorrow, just enjoy the day. Have fun. Enjoy the family. We'll talk to you next time.
No Bye-bye. Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.